The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
On his way to the end zone.
I'll tell you what, that was a spectacular play.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
What a play! Off to the races! Touchdown! Oh, he's done it again!
Now here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, Heath, and Ben.
Friday Mailbag here on Fantasy Football Today. Your emails at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. That's the letter I. And your questions on Apple Podcasts, your Apple Podcast reviews, always very appreciated. Leave us a 5-star review and ask us a question. I'm Adam Azer. No Dave. No Jamie. No Heath. No Chris. No Schrager. We got a new guy joining the show today. He's an editor for CBSSports.com for the fantasy site. His name is Dan Schneier, and we welcome him to the show. And you can see, if you're watching the video, at Dan Schneier, S-C-H-N-E-I-E-R. Dude, that's four straight consonants and three straight vowels. So it's a lot to spell. At Dan
Schneier,
I have
friends
NFL.
Who still can't spell that name right, Adam. 10 years, 20 years, doesn't matter.
And then you got NFL at the end, just for some more consonants. At Dan Schneier NFL, follow him. All right, tell us about yourself, Dan. Welcome to the show. First time on FFT, not the last time. Welcome. And who are you?
Well, I'm very excited to be here, Adam. And as you well know, I had some questions beforehand. What's the dress code? I didn't want to come in here overdressed. I want to come here underdressed. So I just went with the Rob Lowe. You know, Rob Lowe, famously a few years ago, he went to that football game. I think it was Saints. I'm pretty sure it was Saints Rams. I'm not positive. That NFC Championship game. And he was wearing, basically, he looked like a referee, as you described it. He had the NFL logo on. It's a good way to stay neutral. You know, you don't want to show off your bias. And I say that with all this Giants gear behind me, because for those who don't know, I am an editor for CBS Sports, but I also do run the Big Blue Banter podcast, New York Giants, all 22 film-based podcast. So if you're a Giants fan, check it out. But yeah, I love football, man, and I'm really excited to get going on this. I've been looking forward to this day for a while, Adam.
Oh, good. Yeah, we've been looking forward to it, too. We've been trying to get you on, and we've had you in a lot of mock drafts, so it's awesome to hear your voice now and get your fantasy advice. Let's get started with an email from Colin to the crew who has consistently overvalued Joe Mixon. Might be some truth to that. Why aren't you talking about wide receiver twos? Not wide receiver twos for a fantasy football lineup, but with each team. For example, Tyler Lockett helped me when Doug Baldwin was finishing his career. So did Landry after Beckham joined. The second receiver as a full topic, team by team, helps, especially with what you talk about least round six and later. Think Mike Williams or Russell Gage. Paris Campbell, he mentions, and he goes on. He's angry. He doesn't like the way we value Joe Mixon, and he doesn't like that we don't talk about round six and later, and he doesn't like that we don't talk about the second wide receivers on teams. So are there any second wide receivers that jump out at you for Colin here?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good point. I think a lot of the times these second wide receivers, typically the ones for me that operate out of the slot, they get the cleanest looks. So for example, Cooper Kupp, he's the best example of this. He's just made a career out of operating out of the slot, because when you're lined up in the slot, you're facing predominantly zone coverage instead of man coverage. And it makes it a lot easier to get open. CeeDee Lamb's the best example of this. I think he'll be even better this year, but he's looking for deeper guys round six or later. So some of my favorites, Adam, are Curtis Samuel, who I think they signed for a reason. That's an offense that likes to move the ball through the air. Darnell Mooney is prime for a breakout. He's a great example of this. And then a little bit deeper, Robbie Anderson. I think he was miscast a bit in his role with the Jets. They had him running a lot of just go routes and vertical routes. But in last year in Joe Brady's offense with Carolina, you saw him operate in a different way, and I think that will translate with Darnold this season. A couple others I love, Adam, and I don't know how you feel about Deebo Samuel. They're going to manufacture a lot of touches for him, again, out of the slot, but also in motion when they bring him into the backfield. And then Michael Pittman, somebody who I loved last year as a rookie profile, and I think he'll take a big jump with Carson Wentz this year.
I like Pittman, too. I think he has a chance to be the number one wide receiver if he takes that year two leap that everybody knows I look for. I do not like Deebo Samuel. I think you had a really good list there. I'm not really looking at Darnell Mooney, but I see the sleeper appeal there. People really like Darnell Mooney, and I get it. I just don't really want to put – I don't want to put too many eggs in the basket of the Bears passing game. I don't like Deebo because I think he's the third guy. You know, it's not just wide receiver. It's got to be the number two guy, right? And it's obviously Kittle is one, and I think Ayuk is two. And I wouldn't be shocked if that were flipped this year in terms of targets. But I think Samuel's going to be third. And 4 years under Kyle Shanahan, nobody's had more than five touchdown catches. So I just don't see him doing enough, and I don't see him scoring more than five touchdowns. So Deebo, to me, I just don't really think there's a ton of upside there. He's going right after Devontae Smith and Tyler Boyd. And I can't tell you how much I'd rather have both Devontae Smith and Tyler Boyd than Deebo Samuel. And he's also going ahead of Curtis Samuel, going a few picks later.
I could see it on Boyd. For me, with Devontae Smith, I feel like there's a good chance that that passing game is not going to be what people think it is. Jalen Hurts bailed from the pocket a lot as a rookie and kept things out of structure. Smith seems to me like somebody who needs things to be a little bit more in structure like it was last season with Mac Jones. And as far as Deebo goes, I get what you're saying. There is capped touchdown upside. I think that. But these receivers like Deebo Samuel, Laviska Shenault, these players, and hopefully for the Giants' sake, Kadarius Toney, these players who the offenses manufacture touches for, whether that be motion them into the backfield for those quick push passes or just getting to them quickly out on the outside or on the perimeter, because they know once they have the ball in their hands, they can force missed tackles or create yards after contact. I think they have a lot of value. Now, I would tend to say more for PPR leagues, Adam. If you're in a full-point PPR league, I like Deebo Samuel a lot more than if you're in a standard league or even a half-point. But in those full-point PPR leagues, there's only so many guys who are getting touches manufactured for them every single game. You may have a guy on the outside like Devontae Smith who has a game where he only sees four or five targets because the passing game just wasn't on track. Jalen Hurts was leaving the pocket. And Smith might not be the best example of that because Alabama did do a good job of using him in motion and on quick hitters. But there are receivers like that. Brandon Ayuk, for example, I think he is a better receiver from a talent standpoint than Deebo. But I can see a situation this year where he doesn't get as many targets as people think he's going to get.
Yeah, and by the way, Dan does a lot of scouting too. He wrote a lot of our NFL draft player profiles as well. So you're going to hear that kind of incorporated in this. Jay writes with his first ever email. And I'm assuming that was his first ever email to the show, not just his first ever email ever. And he says, because if it is, this is a strong email for your first ever email. Good job. I won my 9-year strong hometown PPR league for the first time last year. And due to the Julio trade, it's affecting my keeper. So I can keep two. Dalvin Cook in the first round, but the 12th overall pick. Calvin Ridley with the 13th overall pick, second round. AJ Brown in the third round, the 36th pick. This is easy.
Yeah, we'll see if it's easy for me then, Adam. Now that you just put the pressure on, for me, it's Cook for sure. And then I'm also going with AJ Brown. Yeah. The key for me here is just the value from pick 13 to 36. I actually think Julio's arrival will only help Brown because it's going to force defenses to use more bracket coverage against Julio. Julio might be old, but he's still just as impactful and effective. And defenses still give him just as much attention. So that's a great thing for AJ Brown. And more importantly here, the Titans secondary could be low-key really, really bad this year. They lost to Dory Jackson. He signed with the Giants. And they didn't make any real effort to replace him or really improve anyone on that secondary. A secondary and a pass defense in general that was lagging last season. So I think that there's low-key a chance for really good game script for this Titans passing game. I'm all in on a lot of players in this Titans offense from at their ADP, from Brown to Julio to Tannehill as well.
Janoris Jenkins. They got the Jackrabbit. Don't forget. But no, that's a downgrade from Adoree Jackson, you would think, who barely played last year, and they had a bad defense. This is from Ryan. They did have a great offense, and Ryan wants to know about Derrick Henry. Am I crazy to think Derrick Henry could see some regression this year? He's 27. He almost got 400 touches last year. Running backs generally decline years after getting around that many touches, right? Am I overthinking it? Would you still take him in the top five in redraft, Derrick Henry?
I still love Derrick Henry. I feel like some athletes in this NFL game are just built different. The way that he's built, he has seemed to manage to. I mean, he's had minor injuries, but he hasn't had too many really crazy injuries that have kept him off the field. And it just feels like he's that type of athlete that's tough to bring down, that creates so much yards after contact and just can play through a lot of these injuries. And I'm still all in on him. 27 does seem like you're getting to that tipping point with running backs. I don't love him as much in dynasty, I guess. But as far as just for this season, that whole Titans offense seems to me like it could take a big step forward with Julio. And that just means more scoring opportunities for Henry.
And the problem with the argument, and I think a lot of people a year ago would have been totally on board with this email, but he did this in 2019. He had 303 regular season carries. And then in the postseason in 2019, my apologies here. Let me just, he had a ton. He had 34, 30, and 19. So he had like about 400 touches the year before. And a yep. deep postseason run, and then he just came back and was just as good, and he had 2,000 yards. I've pointed out that every running back who's had 2,000 yards has lost at least 1 yard per carry the following season. He had he averaged 5.4 yards per carry. Everybody's going to take the over on 4.4. Can he buck that trend, you know? Can he? Then they've all fallen off, you know? They've fallen off. Nobody's done it twice in a row. I can get into the numbers a little bit deeper at another time, but... yeah, he's tough to pass up because he's not human. So that's the problem. That's really the problem with your email and your argument. You're talking about Derrick Henry like he's human, Ryan, and he's proved last year he's not a human being. Rob from Bellingham, dear Josh, Jim, Joe, and Dennis. Josh, Jim, Joe, and Dennis. I don't know. Can you help me understand why Najee Harris will not be this year's Clyde Edwards-Helaire? You'll recall. CEH was a late first-round pick of the Chiefs, was coming into a prolific offense, heralded as a core piece of the Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes dynamic offensive juggernaut. He was going last year in the first round. Why should I trust Najee Harris this year, who will likely be going earlier and earlier as the 21 fantasy football year goes on?
Yeah, I think with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Adam, and obviously, as you know from doing all these mock drafts with me, I'm incredibly high on Clyde Edwards-Helaire this year. I don't think there's any reason to the reasons we were so high on him last year all apply this year. Plus the Chiefs added a lot of firepower to that offensive line. So I love him, but I feel like his rookie season is a bit misremembered. Yeah. I mean, he got injured, but before that he was on pace for, I believe, in the 1300 range of total yards. And so he was still on pace for what would have been not the ceiling of where he was drafted, but surely not a bust by any means. And somebody who you could have relied on as a low end RB1, more in the high end RB2 range. And that was and this is a note from Chris Towers, who's not on the podcast right now, but it's from his recent fantasy preview of the Chiefs offense. That was a lot of bad luck from the touchdown standpoint. I mean, this is according to Chris, it's a number to know. Clyde Edwards-Helaire had 15 carries inside the 10 last year. And, you know, that's not a huge number because 51 players had at least 10, but it highlights that he wasn't really lacking for opportunities to score, but he only came away with one touchdown. Now, is that because of Clyde Edwards-Helaire, or is that because of maybe the Chiefs offensive line dealt with a lot of injuries, wasn't as strong last year, and now they added some serious pieces to that offensive line? And so I feel like that could regress in the positive direction. Clyde Edwards-Helaire could be great. Now, on the flip side, when it comes to Najee Harris, I am definitely concerned with that Steelers offensive line. I think it's been really falling apart the last two or three years, and they have done a little bit to improve it, but not enough. But ultimately, I feel like the volume will still be there. And when you're drafting a guy like that, what you really want is the volume. That's first and foremost, because that can get you to the RB2 numbers, I believe. And at this point, Najee Harris is still not being drafted as high as Clyde Edwards-Helaire was at the end of last August draft. Because I remember Clyde Edwards-Helaire shot up in some drafts all the way to the 5, 6, 7 spot. So it's
I took him. I took him 5th or 6th in a draft. He had, just to keep going with what Chris said, 9 carries inside the 5 and only 1 touchdown. That was the fewest for any running back with 9 or more carries inside the 5-yard line. It's hard to get lower than that, but he's the only one who had fewer than 3 touchdowns. Most had 5 or more, you know, 4 or more, I'd say. So 9 carries, like Mike Davis had 9 carries inside the 5, 5 touchdowns. Kareem Hunt, 9 carries, 3 touchdowns. Aaron Jones, 9 carries, 4 touchdowns. Miles Gaskin, 9 carries, 3 touchdowns. Daryl Henderson, 4 touchdowns. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 1. Taysom Hill, 6. So, you know, the other thing that was annoying for Clyde Edwards-Helaire managers was they would run trick plays with Travis Kelce. They would do those little touch passes to Tyreek Hill. They were a very unconventional inside the 5-yard line. But, you know, I break it down into 2 stretches for him. First 6 games, he was on pace for 285 carries, 56 catches, and 1,819 total yards. After that, it just wasn't, he just wasn't even nearly as involved. And they started throwing the ball more, and their offense really got a lot better, I would say. They just started, you know, putting it on Mahomes. So that's my fear for Clyde Edwards-Helaire, is that they go back to that. But if they're a little bit more balanced next year, then he's going to be really good. But I think with Harris, I guess I could see that argument, yeah. But there are plenty of rookie running backs who had great seasons. Maybe they were drafted earlier than Harris, you know, McCaffrey. Well, McCaffrey wasn't a great rookie season, but Fournette, Zeke, Barkley, they were all drafted way ahead of where Najee was. But, you know, well, you do the prospect profiles. I would say Harris was a clearly better prospect than Clyde.
Definitely a better prospect than Clyde. I felt like Clyde was a bit overdrafted. I think they were looking for a unique role for him. But that's also why I'm a little bit higher on Clyde going into year two. I know they drafted him to run those easy, quick pass running back routes that they know they can get free yardage out of when the defense is putting all the attention on Hill and Kelsey. And we didn't really see that too much in his rookie season. Obviously, the injury played a big factor. But I think that can happen. But Harris, by the way, is also a little bit underrated in that way as well. Yeah. Alabama didn't start using him that way until this past season, but he runs really good arrow routes, and he runs a lot of those routes that are kind of unguardable for most linebackers in the NFL.
All right, next email is from Mark. We'll do some Apple Podcast questions after this, and we'll finish with more emails. I have the fourth pick in a dynasty startup Superflex league that's also tight end premium. What is McCaffrey's value in the first round? If quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, should I take him over a top-tier quarterback? And I mean, I even throw Kelsey in there as a possibility, or some tight end. It's dynasty startup, but it's super flex, and it's tight end premium. So he's got the fourth pick. If McCaffrey's there at four, do you take him?
So I subscribe to the Heath Cummings school of QBs are gold and everything in a super flex dynasty league. It's the way I've always drafted my super flex leagues. Last year, started a startup league. It was a little bit different with salary cap, but I did it with Mahomes, Burrow, Justin Herbert, and Aaron Rodgers. I went heavy on quarterback, and I always don't spend much on running back. So for me, the answer is always going to be the same. I'm going quarterback here. Again, I think the running backs are the one position in dynasty that tends to get overvalued. I mean, even last year, I remember Miles Sanders was viewed as a top 10, top 15 dynasty asset going into startups last year. Now, where do you view him? James Conner was another guy who some people viewed going into last year as maybe a top 40, top 50 dynasty asset. Now you won't even use a top 150, 100, or 200 pick. The roles change too much with running backs. The teams change out the position too much, and the volume isn't always there. So for me, I'm passing on McCaffrey, and I'm taking one of the quarterbacks, because you can still get a really good young quarterback at the fourth pick. It's not like we're talking 8th, 9th, 10th range. Oh,
yeah, yeah. I mean, you're talking Lamar Jackson, Kyler Murray, Josh Allen, someone like that. How's your poker game? You a poker player, Dan?
Oh, I'm a big poker player. Yeah. Adam. Can't wait to put the test to it Tuesday. I got my eye on you, buddy.
Yes, if you are a big fan, then you were with us last year. It's pandemic. We got to do something. We got to entertain some people. Let's play some poker online and let the audience come watch and talk some smack with us. And it was a lot of fun. So we're going to do it on Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern on our YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday. Again, Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern, playing poker courtesy of Faded Spade. So join us there. Faded Spade cards are the preferred playing cards of the World Poker Tour and poker players across the globe. Get your set for 20% off with the code FFT at fadedspade.com. That's a cool offer. Go to fadedspade.com. 20% off. FFT is the promo code. And we'll be giving away two free sets of cards during the show. So again, subscribe to the channel, youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday. Turn the notifications on so you know exactly when we're live. And we'll see you on YouTube Tuesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern. Time for our Apple Podcast questions. From Megan 2971. Dear Joey, Denny, Kevin, and Kurt. Man, I feel like such a loser today, which isn't unusual, but especially today. Joey, Denny, oh yeah, NASCAR. Yeah, well, now I don't feel like such a loser. I'm not a NASCAR guy.
I don't know it either. That one went right over my head, Adam.
I'm usually always one to take a quarterback late in drafts. However, I'm in a 1QB league where quarterbacks are awarded 1 point per completion, and it is 6 points per passing and rushing touchdowns, and there are no negative points given Well, except for interceptions and fumbles. Okay, yeah, well, that's normal. So it's fairly standard, except 1 point per completion. Should I draft quarterbacks a little sooner than, say, after round 9 or 10?
So I've heard this question a lot in a different sense, Adam, and my answer is always the same. The one I usually hear it in is just the ones that have the classic 6 point passing touch instead of 4. And to me, I don't think it changes all that much, because the reason why you're drafting quarterbacks late and why there's so much value in waiting at quarterback is not because of the scoring. It has all to do with the fact that you only start 12 each week and there's 32 in the NFL versus all the other positions where that doesn't really qualify, except for tight end. That's a onesie position, but that's its whole other thing, because there's a huge tight end dead zone after the big three and maybe four this year. So my take would be that the one wrinkle here, Adam, is the 1 point per completion. What I would be looking for is quarterbacks that are in high volume offenses that pass the ball a lot. And so I think you can look to take one of, earlier, but what you're really looking for is to take a quarterback whose defense stinks. So they're going to be in game script, where they have to throw the ball a lot in comeback mode, and a quarterback who has a pretty high completion rate.
Well, let me tell you, like Tom Brady had 401 completions last year and Lamar Jackson had 242.
Exactly.
Okay. So we're talking about 160 more points for Brady. Justin. So
that's crazy.
When you see, I hope I did that math right. 159, I think. When you see questions, when I see questions like this, it's not necessarily you need to draft a quarterback earlier. It's you have to change your rankings.
Yep.
Point per completion and 6 point per passing touchdown league. I'm not going to do rankings for these right now, but I am taking Tom Brady over Lamar Jackson.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. In fact, you could probably wait at quarterback, because people are going to take the usual suspects, and you can take Matt Ryan.
Yeah.
Who led the NFL in completions. Matt
Ryan, perfect for this.
Right. You know, the drop back passers gain a lot more value. So it just changes the players. It changes the rankings, not the strategy, I think. Brennan in Grand Rapids, Michigan. This one I think I know. Dear Tom, Jim, Chad, and Denard.
These are going all over my head, Adam. I got to be honest.
All right, come on, listen. We're in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Okay.
Denard.
Oh, okay, we got it. Denard Robinson.
Yeah, these are Tom Brady. Michigan quarterbacks.
Yep.
Yeah, all right. I have picks 104, 209, 210, and 304 in the rookie draft. So 104, 209, 210, and 304. It is a 10-team IDP PPR league with two flex. Who should I aim for with my 2 second-round picks and my 3rd-round pick?
So I really like where he's at from a quarterback standpoint, because it's only one quarterback starting league. You can bank on Kyler, I think, for 10 years. Worst case scenario, maybe Tua breaks out. Tight end's a bit different. Kelsey's going to be there for a few more years. I don't love the back end three, but tight end, you can usually kind of – tight end, I wouldn't use one of these picks on. So what I really think you should focus on here is running back and wide receiver depth. And at the 209 and 210, if they somehow fall, I would prioritize Michael Carter, the running back on the Jets, or Terrace Marshall, the receiver on Carolina, or Kadarius Toney, who continues to just plummet in these rookie drafts, the receiver from the Giants. But otherwise, I love Josh Palmer, the wide receiver for the Chargers. He was, out of all the receivers I scouted, I thought he was the best value by far in the NFL draft. I was really excited to see him match up with Los Angeles Chargers, because he's a massive deep ball threat, and that's perfect for Justin Herbert. I also really like Dyami Brown, who's out of UNC and went to the Washington football team. He's just a really unique prospect who has a lot of size, who's a great size speed combo. He kind of reminds me of a DK Metcalf DK Metcalf Lite. And if that makes any sense, he's not just as talented, but he's got size and speed, and he was kind of underdrafted. Otherwise, for your next picks, I like Nico Collins, Kenneth Gainwell, Amari Rodgers, if you need the help now, and Aaron Rodgers comes back. But at the 304, I want to give you a couple sleepers too. I love Khalil Herbert. He's a running back who was drafted to the Bears. When I scouted him, I comped him to Tiki Barber. I thought he was by far and away the best value of the entire running back class. I think it could also be interesting with that 304 to just get a potential IDP stud, because you did mention it was an IDP league. And if you're going to go that route, I would look to get Mika Parsons or Jamin Davis, linebacker for the Cowboys, linebacker for the Washington football team. Both of those guys are going to be racking up a lot of tackles, but they can also make plays as a blitzer and in coverage. So they're three-way linebackers. I think those are the guys to prioritize with those picks.
Mic drop. Good stuff. From Russ Bin. Dear Jalen, Mac, and Tua. You know these ones, or you need help? Okay.
Loser. I got it.
Alabama quarterbacks and now fantasy quarterbacks. Half PPR, 10-team league. DK Metcalf in the fifth or Hockenson in the 15th?
This one for me, Adam, I'm curious if you disagree with me, but it's going to be DK Metcalf for me without a doubt. I am, and we're going to, I don't want to spoil it because I may be drop, we may be doing something with this later, but TJ Hockenson is one of my, on my top five to avoid list. I want nothing to do with Hockenson this season.
I would take Hockenson because I'm pretty sure you can get Metcalf in the third or the fourth. Hockenson is probably like a seventh or eighth round pick in a 10 team. No, like a sixth round pick in a 10 team league based on his ADP. Sixth or seventh.
Why are we so high on Hockenson, Adam? I'm very curious.
Target volume. He's going to.
But is that even a guarantee, or are we just assuming with Jared Goff there, he's going to get a ton of targets?
It's not with just Jared Goff there. It's with Breshad Perriman and Tyrell Williams and Amon-Ra St. Brown. And they have a really bad receiving core.
It could also just be a really bad passing game, though.
It will be. I'm doing the research now to see. I've only done 3 of the 5 years. I want to see the last 5 years where the top tight ends have finished in terms of targets on their respective teams. And through 2016, 17, and 18, every single top five tight end was first or second on his team in targets. So just that's a little bit of a side note. Just keep that in mind. We expect that from Kelsey. We expect that from Waller and Kittle and all that. But that's why I don't really want anything to do with Irv Smith. I don't think he has top five upside. Something to think about. I think he's going to lead the team in targets. We know they're going to have a bad defense. So I think they'll be throwing a lot. And I understand. We did our tight end episode yesterday. I understand that the metrics don't really show that he's a great player. But I think you're just kind of buying into the opportunity. He could be second or third in targets among tight ends. And if he is, then like Kyle Rudolph 5 years ago, he's gonna back into being a top five tight end.
It is also an Anthony Lynn offense, though, so a lot of those targets will funnel through the backs. I just feel like when you bank on these guys, it's just more so with the running back position than tight end. I don't think there's as many examples with tight end. But when you're banking on projected volume and a bad on a offense you know is not going to be very good at all, I think it could be bottom five in the NFL. It seems like those are the types of bets that tend to fail more often because volume is kind of tricky. We think that he's the best receiver on that offense, but is that for sure? He's more of a two-way tight end. I feel like he's a better blocker than receiver. So I don't know about this one. Hockenson's going to remain on my avoid list.
All right. Yeah, he's going back-to-back with Mark Andrews. So you're an Andrews guy in that argument?
Without a doubt, but I'd take Pitts over both of them.
This is from Judy. Hello, Alice, Bradley, Anderson, and Cup. Oh, those are Coopers.
There we go.
Yeah. I'm the commissioner of a 10-team half PPR redraft league. We have a 6-team playoffs with 2 byes. It seems like every year someone gets screwed in the first or second round and scores the second most points that week, but loses to the team who scores the most points. It seems to me like the 3 seed gets screwed for doing better in the regular season than the 4 and the 5. I presented the idea of a points-based playoff system where the 2 highest-scoring teams move on the first 2 weeks of the playoffs and then a normal one-on-one championship week in week 17. I don't think it would make the playoffs any less boring and ensure that the team who performs the best in the playoffs moves on. I have done this, Dan. I did it in fantasy baseball last year and had no problem with it. Actually, I am the commissioner of that league, that baseball league, and I forgot that I made that the rule. And I thought I won the first round of the playoffs, and then I went back and looked at the rules, and I realized that my matchup had the 2 lowest scores. So I actually lost. But yeah, I think it's a good idea. I think once you get to the playoffs, I think it's a fine idea. I don't think you have to do this, but if your league likes it, once you get to the playoffs, you've got 4 teams playing in the first round, highest 2 scores advance. You've got 4 teams playing in the next round, highest 2 scores advance, and then you've got your championship.
Yeah, I'm all in on this. I'm all in on anything to help with the variance of fantasy sports. I like the 2-week championship idea. I don't know if you've heard of that, Adam, but a lot of leagues do. The championship game is the last 2 weeks, and it's just the aggregate score of that between the finals matchups.
And an 18-game season. Now you can do that in weeks,
right,
in weeks 16 and 17. You don't have to play week 18, but you get your normal fantasy schedule, but a 2-week championship. It's not a bad idea.
Yep. So I'm on board with this. I think it's a great idea.
Okay. Here's one from Method Manilow in West Virginia. Hey, Geno, Pat, Mark, Jeff, and Oliver.
That Geno Smith, the first one, and then Pat White.
I mean, are these West Virginia quarterbacks? Mark Bulger? I don't know the others.
Yeah.
Okay. Two quarterback league, 10 team, $200 salary cap league. All yards count the same. Passing, rushing, and receiving. Interesting. Keeping Dak for $30. Would you keep Derrick Henry for 26, Calvin Ridley for 19, or Jalen Hurts for 5 in a 2QB league?
I think I'm going to have a different answer than you on this one, Adam. I'm going Jalen Hurts. I just feel like with this scoring system, QBs are worth just about everything, and I would get as many as you can. Yeah, it's 10 team, so that means there's going to be potential for more on the wire, but I would imagine if you're in a league like this where all yards count the same, passing and rushing, then you're gonna probably see a league where everyone owns QBs. And if you have more QBs, you can use them as trade bait. I would just try to get as many quarterbacks as possible. So $5 Hurts, I'll take it.
I agree completely. This one is from RTEYUVGRR. How badly did I screw up? I had 1.1 in a Superflex Dynasty League startup. I traded 212 and 5.1 to get back in the first round, and I wound up with a core of Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Superflex, A.J. Brown, and Hockenson, but I have Gaskin and Edmonds at running back. Did I give up too much? Was Hockenson a mistake at 4.1?
So I'll start with a good here. I love having a Superflex core of Lamar Jackson and Mahomes. I've said before, in Dynasty, I'm all about the quarterbacks, and I'm literally downgrading running back. So I don't mind that you're weak at running back, but I can't get on board with Hockenson at 4.1. I'm not a big believer in him. We just went over this a little bit earlier. I don't see the profile for him as being kind of a fantasy difference maker. He's not the receiver Darren Waller is. And I think if you're going for that type of play at 4-1, you're hoping he can evolve into that, not only a target hog, but someone who can do something with the target. So other than that, I like it, but I do kind of feel like Hockenson was a mistake at 4-1.
Yeah, as someone who likes Hockenson, I wouldn't have taken him that early, but yeah, you got some good stuff there. You'll be all right. And I think, Connor's going to get hurt, so Edmonds is going to have a few weeks where he's potentially a huge stud this week, so he'll be good there. From B. Do Well. Good morning, Pete, Keith, Eddie, and Ezekiel. Those are Ohio State running backs. Oh, this guy's uncle is Keith Byers, so that's pretty cool. Half PPR league with two keepers. We can only keep one position per keeper, so you can't keep two running backs or two wide receivers. I think I may have read this as an email, but we'll do it anyway. I'm keeping McCaffrey. So who would you keep? Ridley in the third, McLaurin in the fifth, or make a trade for Kelsey in the second. And then don't make my, so he would have to give up Zeke and Ridley for Kelsey. So Ridley in the third, McLaurin in the fifth, or trade Zeke and Ridley for Kelsey.
That's a tough call because I am with you, Adam. I am team Kelsey this year. I think he is one of the best values in fantasy. Anytime you can get him, and I've seen it happen after the first six picks of a draft, I'm in on it. But I think it's a little steep to give up Zeke, in this case, Zeke and Ridley for Kelsey. For me, it's a close call, but I'm going with McLaurin over Ridley based on the volume. I think they're both going to be high volume players in offenses that are either going to want to throw a lot, like Washington, based on their coordinator, or need to throw a lot like Atlanta, because I think their defense is going to be terrible. So I'm going to go with McLaurin here. I think I like them both as prospects. I think they're very similar receivers, by the way. They're really good at route running and getting open. And so, and they're going to have a lot of targets. So I'm going with McLaurin here.
From Leo9 Das, another sleeper, Colts tight end Kylan Granson. Your thoughts?
I think that's going a little too deep, but I do love a sleeper tight end on the Colts roster who's not named Kyle Granson, and it's Mo Ali Cox. I think that we've seen already with Carson Wentz, he can provide value for a tight end too with Dallas Goedert. We've even seen him make two tight ends fantasy viable at the same time. So I feel like Mo Ali Cox is a really good athlete. He flashed a little bit of his skill set last year, but Phillip Rivers, just that arm was pretty dead. So I really like Mo Ali Cox as a sleeper in that offense.
From Maple Syrup, Dynasty League, PPR, three receivers. Trade Justin Herbert. I think we read this one last week. I already have Dak Prescott. I trade Justin. Yeah, we hated this trade, so sorry. Do not give up Justin Herbert for Michael Pittman.
No.
Yeah, you can do better than that. All right, time for some emails to finish the show at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. We will get to them right after this quick break on Fantasy Football Today.
What's up, everyone? I want to tell you about a car that you are going to love. Check it out. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, I love that, available dual wireless charging pads ensure that you can take on any adventure. So let's say you're ready to take the family on a camping trip or something like that. The Santa Fe is perfect for you. You've got all-wheel drive. You can load everyone up in the third row. It's time to start being adventurous, and you need the right car, and that's the Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
And we are back. Here we go. Adam Azer with Dan Schneier. Make sure you're following him on Twitter at Dan Schneier NFL. That is S-C-H-N-E-I-E-R, Schneier. It's easier to type than to say.
Completely agree.
Right? Yeah. From Chris, Dynasty League, I have Derrick Henry, Mike Davis, and Kamara. Would you take Trey Sermon or Michael Carter?
I'm banking on Carter here for two key reasons. I think he's a better prospect. Dave actually did the prospect breakdown of him and watched a lot of his film. And we compared notes because I had watched him for another podcast I do. And we just like his skill set a lot for the NFL. He's really good at forcing missed tackles. And then he has the burst to turn those into touchdowns potentially for fantasy purposes. I also feel like he has a clearer path than Sermon. Just like you said, Shanahan's workload history, I just don't ever see Sermon being the guy. And I'm not so sure Michael Carter will be the guy right away, but I think ultimately he can evolve into that type of player.
This is from Eric from the best city in the Sunshine State.
Ooh.
And addressed to Ed, Ray, Michael, and Warren. So this guy is...
What is the best city in the Sunshine State?
The best city that I've been to?
Tampa? Is that what that is?
Oh, God, no. He's a Miami guy. So
Miami. Tampa's you think fine. Miami's the best city in the Sunshine State, Adam?
I hate Miami.
Yeah, I don't like it either. So that's the wrong answer for me.
I really don't know. I like Palm Beach a lot. It's very nice. Yeah. It's quiet. West Palm. Oh, you know what? I'm gonna say Delray. Delray, like downtown Delray. Great. You ever been there?
I've never been to Delray.
Yeah.
No.
You can check it out. It's fun. Okay. All right. So Eric from Delray says, I got an offer for Justin Jefferson from the Jonathan Taylor manager straight up. Would you trade Jefferson for Taylor? It's a dynasty league. He has Tyreek Hill, Calvin Ridley, CeeDee Lamb, Terry McLaurin. And he also has Dobbins, Mixon, and Gaskin. This is a really good team here.
Same.
Yeah. Well, I think I would take Taylor. But yeah, I would take Taylor because he is definitely deeper at wide receiver than running back. What would you do?
I'm in the same boat as you, Adam. I normally, again, anti-running back in Dynasty, but with his receiver depth, first of all, this team is going to win championships in the next 5 years. That's a multiple. This team is stacked. I don't know how you got there, but good for you, my friend. And Taylor is also kind of that next level prospect. If you remember back to the combine, he was comped similarly, at least from an athletic standpoint, to Saquon Barkley. He's been the closest comp to Barkley since Barkley was drafted. I know that hasn't been many years, but Barkley was kind of that next level running back prospect from a size speed standpoint. So I love this trade. I think it's a no-brainer given your wide receiver depth.
Okay, this is from Revon. I recently had the 10th pick and I tried out a strategy, which I think I like if I'm picking at the ends. I'm pretty sure this is a best ball league. So I locked up my studs in the first four rounds. Aaron Jones, Cam Akers, Julio Jones, Michael Thomas. Michael Thomas in round four. Excellent. Rounds five through six, I swung for the fences with the combo of Lamar Jackson and Mark Andrews. And after those picks, I decided to lock up backfields. I took Fournette and Jones, Singletary and Moss, and then I took MVS and Lazard. My strategy is if they play the hot hand, then I win at that position. This only works in best ball as I do not have to set my lineup. Are there any other backfields that should be going back to back? Arizona, Denver. Yeah, this is an interesting. Yeah, so locking up a backfield in best ball, it's an interesting strategy. And what do you think?
I have a different mindset on this one, Adam. I actually don't at all like the idea of stacking backfields in best ball. So I think you're limiting your upside. At best, only one of the two will be able to make your best ball lineup weekly. But there's going to be weeks where that offense doesn't score a rushing touchdown and neither scores. And if both of them are healthy, there's a good chance that neither of them is startable in best ball. So I really think you're limiting your upside. And best ball to me is all about upside. You're playing to be first of 12. It's not a weekly league. So to me, I'm not a believer in stacking backfields.
Okay. From Andrew Phillips, dear Joe, Warren, Doug, and Jeff. These were quarterbacks that played in the CFL. Joe Theismann, Warren Moon, Doug Flutie, and Jeff Garcia.
That was impressive, Adam. How did you get there?
You're joking, right?
not entirely. I mean, no, I guess I don't know. I don't know the game.
No,
well.
No, because he put it in the email.
I missed that part of the email.
Yeah, he told. I don't know. I don't think I would have gotten that. No. I mean, it's Joe. Like, I see Warren, and it's like, okay, that's probably
you
Warren.
You think Warren Moon, yeah.
Yeah. But the other, yeah, I don't think I would have gotten that.
It's different now that I know it. Now I can be, oh, Doug Flutie, yeah, so I don't know. I'm taking the L on this one, Adam.
No, I would have too. I just didn't feel like being like, oh, what? I just cheated. So anyway, this is an 8-team, 2-quarterback, 2-keeper league. I had a strong team last year and I finished third, but my biggest weakness was QB2 in my 2QB league. I had Lamar Jackson and Cam Newton. I want to lock up my QB2 early this year, potentially with my first pick. I'm keeping Lamar. So the other quarterbacks that are gone that are going to be kept are Mahomes, Allen, Brady, Murray, Prescott, and Wilson. Which QB would you target from the next tier? Herbert, Hurts, Stafford, anyone else?
Yeah, I have a lot of, first of all, I'm going to make a comment now that I love Matt Stafford this year with Sean McVay. I feel like that offense has been so efficient with Jared, even with Jared Goff at times in that passing game. And I really think Jared Goff is a massive step down from Stafford. So I think he's going to hit the ground running there. They have really good weapons as well. But I have different late round guys that I'm targeting and they all fit the same billing, Adam. They're all those Konami code quarterbacks. So for those of you not familiar with the Konami code, it's basically targeting quarterbacks who also give you points on the ground. So Jalen Hurts is a great example, but he'll be drafted a bit higher. I'm going to be honest, I'm back on the Cam Newton train this year. I feel like they've done enough to upgrade around him, and you're still going to get a guy who's utilized early and often in the red zone as a runner. And so I feel like he can give you a lot of value there. Daniel Jones is another one, Adam. I don't want to sound like a homer here because things can go poorly, but his ADP just keeps sinking and sinking and sinking. And he still is that same quarterback from his rookie season who gives you the upside on the ground with rushing stats. And now he has Kenny Galladay to work with, Kadarius Toney. So I feel like he's another example of somebody I'm targeting late that can fit that Konami code.
Yeah, this question, though, was, you know, he wants to take his number two quarterback with his first pick. So once Mahomes,
a little bit higher, right? Yeah.
Mahomes, Jackson, Allen, Brady, Murray, Prescott, and Wilson are all gone. Herbert, Hurts, Stafford, those are the three he mentioned. You got to throw Aaron Rodgers in there. I think I would probably just go Aaron Rodgers, but I tell you what, if it were a 1QB league, I would take Jalen Hurts.
Mm-hmm.
But since you're not going to be able to just play the waiver wire or, you know, try to find upside later in the draft, really, I guess you could, but I would probably go Aaron Rodgers. That'd be my pick.
Stafford. Out of those guys, I'm with you for sure. I think people are underrating Rodgers right now just because of the uncertainty of the situation. It doesn't seem to me like he has as much leverage as some people think he does. I think he's just going to be on the Packers. They'll do something nice to make him feel, you know, comfortable. And if he is back on the Packers, he should be the go-to guy here as your target for that really high-end second QB, especially with the addition of Amari Rodgers. It's going to make him even better.
Last email. Ahoy, gents, from Haas in a town in Hobbiton, or something. This is from Lord of the Rings. In of the far eastern part of West Farting, I don't even know what these words are.
I consider myself a nerd, Adam. I like a lot of this stuff, and I've never really gotten into Lord of the Rings. I don't know what happened there.
I watched the first one about 17 years ago. I think I was a freshman in college, so that was, what was that, 2002, actually, so more than that. I didn't like it at all. I thought it sucked. But then I saw a battle scene on TV, and I was mesmerized. I was, wow, this is impressive. I need to give this series another run. So we'll see. Maybe I'll try to find time for it in like 18 years when my kids are in college. All right. Draft philosophy discussion question. That should benefit the majority of your listeners like me who play in three or fewer leagues per year, who might question analyst advice as too bullish or worse, stop listening to the show because their seasons are ruined because they are risky first and second round draft picks bust. The question is, don't stop listening to the show. Compared to the common listener who might play in one or two leagues at most, do fantasy analysts have a bias toward drafting players based on potential upside because they can better afford to miss on those gambles by spreading that risk around in their 10 or more leagues that they play in? That's a good question. Are we more risky in our drafts because we have so many teams? My answer is no. I do not ever factor that in. I don't, you know, my philosophies would be the same no matter how many leagues I were in. How about you?
Yeah, I'm the same way as you. I don't let it factor into my thinking at all.
Yeah, I think that, no, you should draft for upside. I do think that we overstate upside a little bit because we don't know who has the most upside. The example I use often was two seasons ago, Todd Gurley was coming off what was, you know, he was basically LaDainian Tomlinson for the second straight year, and then he hurt his knee, and this was the Rams Super Bowl year. So he was coming off that run, and remember, it didn't end well for him. He didn't look good late, but he became a second-round pick, kind of a late second-round pick, and I was like, who has more upside than Todd Gurley? He was the best player in fantasy 2 years in a row before his injury. So I was like, I'm definitely taking him over Dalvin Cook. And, of course, Cook has now become almost Todd Gurley. Todd Gurley is not on a football team. So I think that when you hear analysts talk about upside, we could easily be wrong about it, but I don't think it's a mistake to target upside, no matter how many leagues you're in. That's how you win. You take shots. I wish I had more guts last year and had taken Metcalf over Lockett. I would have done, you know, because I felt it in my gut, but everybody talked me out of it. So, no, it's not as no, there's no effect based on the amount of leagues I'm in, but yeah, I think the word upside is probably like a drinking game. We probably use it a little bit too much, I would say.
I also, though, feel like, Adam, in this regard, I don't think you can really, unless you're taking, you know, Patrick Mahomes, which is terrible from a positional value standpoint, and we wouldn't advise it in those first two rounds, you can't really bank on floor like it seems to suggest in this. I feel like with injuries being so kind of, I'm injury agnostic, I think they're mostly luck-based. So with the injury factor and a lot of other factors that go into fantasy football, there's so many, the variance is so high, you can't really predict floor either. So if you're just banking on this guy has a high floor, he's not a high ceiling guy, but he has a high floor. Ultimately, sometimes those guys end up not being the high floor guys, and they end up being the bust as well. So that's kind of my take on ceiling versus floor.
Sure. All you have to do is go back to the first email that said, to the crew who has consistently overvalued Joe Mixon. Yeah. Well, Dan, thanks for coming on. Good to hear from you.
It was awesome, man. Thanks for having me, Adam.
You'll hear Dan Schneier again, no doubt. He'll be playing poker with us next Tuesday, youtube.com/fantasyfootballtoday. Head on over to Fantasy Football Today in 5. I just recorded two player profiles with Jacob Gibbs, Justin Jefferson, and Michael Thomas. The math on Michael Thomas is really, really exciting when you talk about target share and air yards and the players who have kind of done what he did last year. You'll see. You'll see. Just check it out. Jacob does a much better job explaining it than I do. That is Dan Schneier. I am Adam Azer. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you Monday on Fantasy Football Today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.